on Saturday afternoon. Probably was appropriate because I was out in my yard putting mulch down. So while I was putting down the mulch, the governor released a 1,587-word treatise on why he wanted to sign Senate Enrolled Act 621. And he says it's because the economic vitality of our state and that our capital city is a, quote, center of commerce and entertainment, end of quote. And to keep our city fiscally responsible to protect, quote, protect taxpayers, encourage economic development, create jobs, and provides for the public safety of the residents of Indianapolis, the governor approved and turned into law starting on July 1st, Senate Enrolled Act 621, a.k.a. a weird revision of UNIGOV. With us, the president of the City County Council, Maggie Lewis, and the vice president, John Barth. Guys, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
In the governor's 1,587-word statement, which I hear is unprecedented by any Indiana governor in the modern era to write something that long about any piece of legislation, He almost like he went out of his way to say the only reason I did it is to keep Indianapolis economically viable. So the challenge now for Democrats on the council to not be seen as obstructionists to keep this city financially strong.
You know, Amos, from day one, I believe that this proposal was nothing more than a power grab. My colleagues have done everything in a responsible manner. We've looked at proposals that's come down from the administration and based them on their merit. And so for them to suggest that we have done anything outside of that is ridiculous. This is a power grab. I believe the administration did not want to deal with the Democrats on the council, so they went to the State House to ask them to fight their battle.
John Barth, I'm confused. The governor says that the city says that the current budget is going to result in significant deficit spending this year. I thought the council had worked with the administration on a bipartisan plan to make sure that the budget ends without a deficit. There's an ordinance that is supposed to be approved, I believe, either introduced or approved tonight at the council meeting that takes a step in that.
Well, beyond that, President Lewis has been working closely with all the city departments to come up with a method of reducing their budgets by 5% in a way to demonstrate fiscal accountability and fiscal responsibility. In fact, this entire time that we've been on the council, President Lewis and I have worked in a bipartisan way with the mayor's office to achieve the goals of things that are good for the city. So for the mayor to reject that approach, that approach that's results-oriented and go to the State House to get a very partisan result is surprising, to say the least.
The governor in his treatise also singled out the council resolution where you all were trying to assess the Capital Improvement Board a payment in lieu of taxes, which is permissible under Indiana law.
Absolutely.
To help deal with the city's shortfall, specifically to deal with public safety. The governor specifically cited that, saying that the council was jeopardizing the CIB's ability to support the Pacers, Colts, Indians, Fever, and ICE, as well as the city's convention business. And then when I looked at the state law that 621 revised, it still allows the council to levy payments in lieu of taxes against the airport and other entities, but not the Capital Improvement Board. If the concept the governor feels is wrong with the Capital Improvement Board, why wouldn't 621 have eliminated it for everyone?
To me, it makes absolutely no sense. I serve on the CIB board. I felt from day one that there's dollars available in their budget. They utilize our services, and so why can't they pay a little something for public safety?
And it's important to remember that the CIB is a big consumer of public safety services. They use a lot of public safety resources. And just to have a reasonable conversation about what those costs are and if there should be some more reimbursement isn't something that should be taken out of the public realm. That should be a transparent, honest discussion.
The other thing, Vice President Councilman John Barth, the governor did say in his treatise that he's concerned that if he signed this legislation, it would eliminate your position on the council. You're one of the four at-large seats, but that he was consoled by the fact that nothing in the legislation removes the incumbent council members. I'm sure he was consoled because if the legislation had removed incumbent council members, that would have been straight up slam dunk unconstitutional. I, as an honorary lawyer, could have won that case in front of any court. The fact that he hemmed and hawed so long on this and waited until just before the basketball game on Saturday to announce his decision, how did that strike you? And then saying, well, I was a little nervous about this at-large thing, but we want to make sure that we're a viable city for commerce and entertainment.
Well, I actually want to keep the focus on the mayor in particular, and the fact that he came into office saying that he was a non-political leader and that he wasn't interested in the political side. But when it came down to brass tacks and we had a Democrat majority on the council, especially with two leaders on the council who wanted to work with him, he chose not to work with us in a bipartisan way, but to take his argument in a partisan way to the state house. And that's just not how people want things to get done. They want results for the city. And I think folks need to pay attention to how the mayor has acted, especially given the opportunity to take a results-oriented pathway that he rejected.
You may have questions on the subject. Where do we go from here? 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. The governor also said in the beginning of his treatise that he made it, quote, "I have made a point to meet with supporters and opponents and have given careful consideration to their viewpoints. Hoosiers with differing views on this legislation have made thoughtful arguments, and I respect the opinions expressed by both sides," end of quote. The governor did point out that he did something that this mayor does not do. My understanding is this mayor has never met one-on-one with the sheriff, with the prosecutor, with the county clerk, the three major countywide offices directly affected by this new law. I've heard on the grapevine that the governor did meet with at least one of those county elected officials, maybe with a couple of them. The fact that the governor can at least meet with members of the opposite party. He may disagree, he may, you know, listen, but still do what he's going to do. And this mayor doesn't. Is this an issue that Democrats on the council need to start making with frequency of the lack of communication that this mayor has with elected officials in this city and county?
Absolutely. I think it's time that we hold the mayor of our city accountable. He needs to have conversations with the elected officials in this community. We were all elected on our own accord, and he has to respect that and need to come to the table and have the conversations with us.
I was just going to add that it's my strong belief that no matter what position you're elected to, no matter where you're elected, whether it's a strong Democratic area, whether it's a strong Republican area, it's incumbent upon you as a person who's been elected to represent everyone and to hear everyone's perspectives before you make a decision. And that's just an approach the mayor hasn't embraced.
And this is not the first time that we've had this conversation about the mayor not coming and having conversations with members of the city, county councils, and other elected officials in our city. We continue to say that we want to have honest dialogue with the mayor of the city.
The sheriff was here about 3 to 4 weeks ago, mm-hmm. Sheriff John Layton, and I asked him directly whether the mayor had ever met with the sheriff, because they keep even the governor throughout this little thing in his treatise. At least one public agency in Indianapolis is reported to have exceeded its budgetary authority by more than $17 million over the last 3 years. Why the governor did not say the particular agency that he had a concern with, which is the Marion County Sheriff's Department, it seems to be what the mayor has these concerns with, but yet the mayor has never sat down man-to-man, elected official to elected official, and express his concerns directly with the sheriff. If the mayor is that concerned about a particular county agency, it would seem to me ought to be man enough to go to that person and say, "Sheriff, I got concerns."
Absolutely. And we knew that the sheriff's budget was going to be off. We continue to have the conversation about the medical expenses in his department, treating the arrestees. And so that continues to be an ongoing issue. Once again, if he did have an issue with the mayor, with the sheriff's budget, he should have said something to him directly. But he continues to pass it on to other folks in the administration.
And I'll just add, if I may, the very point of being elected and the very point of having public dollars that you're responsible for means that everything you do is done in public. And as I mentioned earlier, the mayor has chosen not to take a public, transparent approach with this. But if he had concerns, then that should have been a public discussion with the council rather than pushing 621, which takes that whole public discussion behind the scenes mm-hmm. to an unelected appointed official who now would have some control over the sheriff's budget.
239-1310, 239-1310. Zaff News Names. Let me go and start today with Anonymous. Hi there. Anonymous.
Oh, yes.
You're on the air. What's up?
Yes, I have concerns about the 621.
Uh-huh.
I have two questions. The first one is, what is the Democratic Party, what can the Democratic Party do legally in court against the governor's and the mayor's 621 efforts? Because those four persons were elected, and to deprive them of what they have been elected for, to me, that appears to be illegal. That's my main question of concern. So I want to know, when are they filing suit, and how can the second question, how can the public, the disaffected public, get in and show their disapproval?
Well, now the law.
I'll take my answer off the air. Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. Now, understanding is the law says that the four at large serve the balance of their term until December 31st, 2015, as I read the law.
No, that's accurate. Everyone who is elected to the current council will serve out their entire terms, including myself. The thing that's really challengeable here and the thing to pay attention to is that. In the sweepingness of this proposal, what also got caught up in it is the court system. The court system also has to go and report to the mayor's controller twice a year. And right there, you have a serious separation of powers issue. The court system should be a standalone entity that is free from political maneuverings. And so because the court system now has to go report to the controller, that's a real serious issue, and I think that's definitely challengeable.
The fact that the governor had to make a specific footnote in his 1,587-word treatise in signing this legislation indicating this city controller thing may impermissibly give the mayor a veto power over the budgets of certain judicial officers and county constitutional officers, that's a part of it?
That is a part of it, and I think that's the area where you have constitutional office holders, as you said, and an independent judiciary, and to force them to go to the mayor's controller to justify their budget is a constitutional issue that I think will probably be litigated.
One of the other aspects of this new law, which was not given a lot of publicity, is that this new law unilaterally reduces the number of township board members from 7 to 5. And now the 9 townships of Marion County who just had to redistrict those 7 districts to comply with redistricting after the 2010 census are going to have to spend dollars anywhere from $300,000 to maybe $1 million total to redistrict those seats again. It seems to me a law that is supposed to be designed for fiscal health, we're wasting money.
Absolutely. I think this is an attack on our township elected officials, township trustees. They've often come after those folks for having additional dollars that they believe are in their budget. And so I just think this is another attack on township government and the government that is closest to the people.
I got an email here that says, Amos, the mayor is not, has not, and will not meet with these people, so why keep begging him? This issue comes up time and time again. He says it gets no traction. Is it that he gets no traction because people really don't know that compared to other mayors, not just in Indianapolis, but mayors in regular cities, regularly meet with elected officials of both parties, regularly is visible. This mayor is becoming increasingly invisible.
I agree. You know, we continue to raise the issue, but for whatever reason, I feel like our community is giving our mayor a pass. He doesn't have to get in front of the cameras. Mayors before him came to the community and shared their thoughts and views about our city, but this individual continues to get a pass. I feel like the community holds the city county councils accountable. They hold our state legislators accountable. However, the standards are not the same for the mayor of our city.
Well, let me just add one thing. I think it's important to note that a big piece of a counselor's job is to listen closely to the community. And part of that responsibility is to pass that information onto the mayor. And what we have now is a community in Indianapolis that is reeling from a dramatic increase in violent crime, with little to no response from the mayor's office. Democrats have a plan to get more police on the street. We're going to talk about that tonight and in the coming weeks. But we need to know, does the mayor understand how concerned people are in the city that this dramatic increase in violent crime has occurred with no response yet from the mayor's office?
239-1310, we go to Lewis. Hi there.
Hey, Amy. Good afternoon to you and your guests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, I want to congratulate, and I'm not being facetious, but I want to congratulate the governor because he did what most Republicans didn't know how to do. Pretend they assault a Republican instead of using a harsh rhetoric. This is the same man who was in Congress that was bound in Cowtown down to the Tea Party politics. And that's what he's done with this here 621 bill as well. He hid what his real agenda was until he got in there. And now he's got a partner in the mayor. And I think this is part of the responsibility to the Democratic leadership in this town to stop putting Democrat lights or Republican lights up for mayor as a mayor candidate. He's going to do what he wants to do. He could care less. If this is the only thing going to change, this is put forth a powerful candidate for mayor, and that's the only way we can change these here policies because they just ran a roughshod right over the people. They met, you know, even with the 500 bill, they're going to say, well, they're trying to convince us that they're going to pay it back with interest. And time they say that, they're going to raise the price of the parking. They're not paying for nothing. That's how you become rich. I mean, I don't know how you become rich, but I know how you stay rich. You spend other people's money. That's exactly what the mayor and the governor is doing.
Let me ask, I appreciate that, Lewis. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Is when I look at the unemployment rate for Indianapolis, that for most of last year was in the mid to low 8%. And in January, 9.5, February, 9.3, March, 9.2. While the unemployment rate nationally slowly goes down, it is obvious that if this mayor has a strategy for increasing jobs, nobody has seen it yet. Will Democrats be introducing any kind of plan or strategy to put Marion County residents to work?
Amos, this has continued to be an issue that my colleagues, Democrat colleagues on the council, have continued to try to address. When we are spending dollars on infrastructure, we try to find ways to ensure that those dollars are spent locally and that we're hiring people in our neighborhoods. And so making sure that there's jobs available to folks in Marion County is a priority for my colleagues on the council. But the bigger question is, what are the priorities for the mayor of this city? You know, he spent all this time and energy over at the State House lobbying for 621 when he could have been focusing on creating jobs on our city. You know, what are the true priorities?
A couple of things. Which TV channel 8, after the tragedy of the hit and run in the 2500 block of Emerson, Eric Halverson went to ask the mayor about that because there were people in the neighborhood that had seen that tragedy before about a lack of sidewalks on Emerson. The mayor's response was, well, we don't have any money. Even though there have been previous instances of these kind of tragedies and past mayors have found the money to alleviate that. In fact, when I looked at the story on Wish TV Channel 8, it showed the problem of bicyclists riding on Emerson, which is wide enough to have bicycle lanes through. And they just remodeled that intersection to 30th and Emerson. bicycle lanes mysteriously weren't put there, even though they got bicycle lanes in the two worst intersections in this city, 38th and Lafayette Road and 82nd and 465 on the northeast side. Is it part of this a lack of priority that a mayor would be that insensitive to say, well, we're sorry that there was a hit and run because there were no sidewalks, but we don't have the money, when we're spending money on cricket and lacrosse stadiums or play fields or whatever? We're spending money on economic development in neighborhoods that don't need economic development?
I think it's a fair question for the people of the city to ask. Why is the mayor's priority clearly cricket in a cricket stadium and not cops? Why is the mayor's priority cricket in a cricket stadium and not concrete and not building sidewalks to keep people safe? Public safety used to be the mayor's number one priority, but now it seems like cricket stadiums has suddenly emerged as his number one thing he focuses on.
The Indianapolis Business Journal reported in their print edition this weekend, John Barth, you were a supporter of a TIF that was designed to bring economic development to places like 34th and Central, 38th and Illinois, the corridors in Mapleton, Fall Creek, and some of the other neighborhoods south of Broad Ripple, south of 42nd Street. And now the city seems to want to use the TIF to create a mini shopping center and maybe a grocery store in Broad Ripple. Last time I checked, Broad Ripple doesn't need – they just got a parking garage and retail. They don't need any more help. Is this the city double-crossing you on – because you were out there on point with some other Democratic councilors on this TIF, and now the city is saying, we don't care where John Barth and other councilors wanted economic development. We're going to put it in ritzy neighborhoods that really don't need taxpayer help.
Well, I've been very clear from the beginning that the Midtown TIF, I championed it and moved it forward because I believe strongly there are neighborhoods in the city, in this district in particular, that have gone decades without any significant investment. And it's my goal and my priority that those neighborhoods be the places that get the first investment out of this TIF. That there's no way around that. That's not negotiable with me. And so I'm going to continue to fight to ensure that those funds are spent in the neighborhoods that need it.
Are you also concerned that this rumored development that's just north of the Broad Ripple Canal off of College would involve a grocery store that's only 1 mile away, if Whole Foods left 54th and College, would cause a deterioration in that neighborhood?
What worries me is that there's a longstanding business that's existed since 1970 called the Good Earth that's right there in Broad Ripple. And if a Whole Foods is going to move in, you know, I'm not going to debate the competition or what should be there and what shouldn't be there. But I don't think it's appropriate for the city to subsidize competition against a longstanding locally owned business.
Let me go to Brenda at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello, Amos.
Hi.
And your guest. I have one comment to make. Anybody wanting to get in touch with the mayor, tell them to call Reggie Jones and Reverend Brown, because it seems like they're the only ones that can get the mayor to come to your station. That's all I got to say, and y'all have a good day.
Thank you.
I don't even think Jim Scheller can get to talk to the mayor, and you know, that's cold. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. It's one of the things you all are doing tonight is there's Proposal 143. And we talked on this program Friday with the folks from Visit Indy, who were saying that aggressive panhandling is causing conventions to want to leave Indianapolis. An aggressive panhandler allegedly chased a meeting planner down Washington Street, and she vowed never to come to Indianapolis. This proposed ordinance does not change aggressive panhandling, which already is illegal anywhere in this city. But this new ordinance that the mayor is pushing would eliminate street musicians or make it extremely difficult or put a street musician at risk if all of a sudden they started playing and somebody, you know, dropped money on the street, then that street musician would get arrested. Is this something where this is an ordinance that perhaps may suddenly die in response to, okay, mayor, if that's how you feel about us, and then we already have a law in the books about aggressive panhandling, the law does not need to be changed?
You know, I look forward to us having this debate at the council level. However, you know, I think this is more about enforcement. If we had those additional officers that the mayor promised us, those 100 additional officers on the street to actually address this, would we have to go back and change the law? And so, once again, for me, it's about priorities. Is it about reducing crime in our community, or is it about making a certain group in our community feel better? What are the true priorities?
But if we already have a law that bans aggressive panhandling and details it very specifically, and it does not violate any civil liberties, all of a sudden to have an addition to the law that says if you're downtown and hold up a sign that says, help me, you've broken the law.
I think something that's important to note is, as the president said, this is a matter of priorities. And right now, because we are so low on our IMPD staffing, there's really not the place to enforce the ordinance that we have. So my question to the mayor would be, why is your priority to put in a draconian new ordinance rather than focusing on enforcing the law we have and seeing if it works or not? Because it hasn't been enforced, we really don't know if the law we have is appropriate or not.
239-1310, 239-1310, Zaf News. One of the other issues has to do with education. One of the other laws that was passed by the legislature, not in this particular law, has to do with removing some of the council's oversight over the mayor's charter schools. And I know Councilor John Barth, you were kind of working with trying to come up with a way for the council to have some oversight on that. What is going to be the procedure moving forward in terms of any oversight of the mayor's charter schools?
As it stands, as of July 1st, the council will lose its authority to approve mayoral charters, and that authority will be moved to a charter school board, and we will have appointments on that board. So really, the oversight will shift to this board. I don't think that's exactly how things are going to work out, however, because I know that the very nature of charter schools and the fact that the mayor can charter them is a concern for some folks in the community, and making sure that there's accountability for these schools and that they are achieving and giving the high level of education that they promise to our city's students is key and very important. So going forward, you can look forward to the council being more involved, continuing to be involved.
Does that – the council then would still have oversight or the ability to ask questions of the mayor's Office of Educational Accountability?
Well, we'll always have that ability to engage with the Deputy Mayor of Education, but via our appointments on the board is where the opportunity for engagement.
Well, let me bring up an issue that the mayor's office and the Deputy Mayor of Education seems to want to shield from public scrutiny. For the past, since at least the first part of this year, the Deputy Mayor for Education has gone around town showing people a blueprint of an educational reform plan called NEO, Neighborhoods of Educational Opportunity. This was part of an effort to enter a contest sponsored by Mayor Bloomberg and the Huffington Post to try to get a $4 to $5 million grant to exercise this project. They didn't get the grant. This plan has never been formally publicly introduced either through news conferences or media briefings. At the same time, we're picking up information that Deputy Mayor Cloth and the mayor's office is actively out soliciting contributions or soliciting funding from large foundations to try to fund this plan that would create anywhere from 30,000 to 70,000 what they call quality school seats, though nobody knows what that means. How is it that we can have someone in our local government using the people's time, the people's resources, and maybe some of the people's money to create a plan that the council has not been briefed on, that has not been publicly introduced in the media, and nobody even knows where the elected mayor stands on the plan that his deputy mayor is not only running around town talking to people, but also talking with national organizations? Is it time for the council to call hearings about the NEO plan and ask, what is this plan? And more importantly, why are scarce city resources, taxpayers' resources, being used to try to create and fund this plan?
I believe that Councilor Barth's committee will actually take up that very issue, because we have heard rumors about the plan. I did get a very brief briefing of the plan, a few weeks ago, but I believe that was after people in the community started whispering about this plan and how come the council wasn't engaged in it. You know, why are we spending our very valuable, our small pot of money on this plan, and the council knows nothing about it. So I believe community affairs will take that issue up. I'm not sure if you have an actual meeting scheduled, but we will start that conversation.
Is this similar to the cricket park where stuff is being done and there's not even a note going to the council on both sides of the aisle? Because I understand the Parks Committee met and both Republican councilors and Democratic councilors were upset about the cricket lacrosse park.
Once again, I think it goes back to accountability and not really wanting to work across the aisles and answer those hard questions. If there's a way for them to get things done without coming before the council, this administration is very comfortable doing so.
239-1310, 239-1310. You said, don't say something.
No, I was just going to say, like President Lewis said, I do plan a series of meetings through the Community Affairs Committee to discuss the charter schools in Indiana, in Indianapolis. And in particular, the issue, I'm not sure if everyone realizes this, but the mayor can issue charters, but there are multiple entities now across Indiana that can issue charters in Indianapolis with close to no public engagement. And so part of the discussion will be NEO, but part of the discussion will be how can we ensure that people of Indianapolis have appropriate opportunity to give input when Ball State and other entities are going to issue charters in Indianapolis.
Let me go to Larry at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, Madam President?
And, hi, Larry.
Vice President. Hey, you know, I've been watching the council on TV, and I think you're doing a good job because I took a trip around the city out on the west side and different places which were depressed. And I was surprised to see what public and private combinations can do to take care of a blighted area. But this deal with Pence, I told you he was a bum. Just look at our constitutions, Article 1, Section 23, Section 24, Section 25 describes what they have done, and those are the issues that ought to be pleaded if they have a court contest. But the main thing, I view this as a new beginning for the council. This is a new beginning because we can have it set up. You know it's illegal, but we have to have it in practice where the these officials that are mandatory offices have to come on their knees, crawl into Mayor Ballard for their money. They need to get on there and get some knee pads on, make a big publicity stunt about it, or just when the money runs out, say, hey, come to the people, save up enough money for a campaign, for the put on the websites, for the CIB and all the campaigns and stuff that come here to have their little get-togethers, and just say, we don't have enough money for your public safety. If you come here, we're not going to be able to guarantee anything. You're going to have to start off. This, like I said, it's a new beginning, and the Democrat elected officials can just let it go ahead and play on out and say, hey, if we can't work for nothing, you shouldn't have to do that. So I just say that I'm surprised at the job y'all are doing. You're doing a good job, and I understand that the black members of the council have to do the things to move this city forward, even if it is some plan of development that they didn't originate that's going to be good for the city. They are not their own persons. They are members of this corporation of Indianapolis. They have to do what's best for the city, as in any corporation. So I'm just happy at what y'all are doing and working together on certain things and holding back. But like I said, this is a new beginning to show the state of Indiana that they can't come in here and regulate our commerce and regulate our offices and so forth. And we need to stop it blunt right now and say, hey, look, we're going to do as much as you give us money for. If we run out of money, we'll be on our knees begging you on camera.
I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is After News. Name us now. The mayor, the person that was a city controller left.
Yes.
Went to go work for a foundation. So he has a new city controller. Now, under the old law and maybe the new law, you still have the ability, you have to approve this appointment?
No. We do not. We don't approve the controller. That's he's a staff person. He's not an appointed official. So no.
So previous controllers didn't have to be approved?
No, sir.
Deputy mayors do.
Deputy mayors do.
Why wouldn't the city controller? Why is that not?
That's a great question. But that's just a hired position under the administration.
sound like that's a law Democrats ought to, you know, introduce in the next legislature to allow the council to approve the city controller. If he has all, that's an interesting point. There's no, that could be a part in the lawsuit.
Absolutely.
Wait a minute, you got somebody that's not even the same rank as a deputy mayor or a head of DPW.
But now that person is responsible for the budget, oversight of the budgets.
239-1310, 239-1310, this afternoon's the name is. The fact, John Barth, of the four at-larges, that you all become on one level lame duck, but on the other level, level liberated. what response have you gotten in the last 48 hours from constituents?
A lot of people.
Because everybody says that nobody knows you at larges and nobody knows who you are and you're not representative and you don't help people, that everyone knows their district councilor and not the at larges.
Well, as I think you know, my background is working in neighborhood associations to try to bring positive change to neighborhoods. And I've, as a at-large member, one of the things I've done is worked hard to bring different neighborhood associations together when they have commonalities to enhance and underline their voice at the city to help them get more power for their priorities. And so what I've heard over and over is people expressing a disappointment that the mayor went this far, that he chose to really politicize something and take a partisan approach. And that has been across the political spectrum.
239-1310, 239-1310. You talked about public safety. Council President Maggie Lewis, there's an issue that really has not gotten a lot of publicity in the last two or three days, but it affects the quality of life. This is because of this road closure out in your district on West 56th Street because of an oil pipeline spilling, I've heard, anywhere from 5,000 gallons to 19,000 gallons of fuel oil, yet the city has been relatively quiet about that. Should the council be concerned about the safety of these pipelines that are running through our city? What if that had been natural gas spilling out? We'd have had an explosion.
You know, Amos, I'm going to keep going back to this. The lack of responsiveness from this administration is so poor and not acceptable. We have got to start pushing the administration to come out and talk about issues that are important to our citizens, to the people of this city. My constituents have had lots of questions, and I try my best to respond. But we have a department in this administration that should be out front educating us about what exactly happened over there on West 56th Street.
239-1310, 239-1310 with Maggie Lewis, the president, John Barth, vice president of the City County Council. I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, the official ribbon cutting of the cultural trail was Friday because the Secretary of Transportation was here.
Mm-hmm.
I know the congressman was there, some others. I understand the mayor wasn't there.
I don't know because I wasn't invited either. So.
I wasn't invited, but I did see on Twitter that he wasn't attending any of the festivities on Saturday.
How can you have this thing that he's bragged about with sustainability and bicycles and what have you, his cultural trail, which I'm sure fits the governor's definition of our capital city as a center of commerce and entertainment, and the mayor's not there for the ribbon cutting? The Secretary of Transportation, a Republican, Ray LaHood, is here, and the mayor's not here for the photo op.
It's surprising. Any time a cabinet official from the United States government is present, I think as mayor you'd want to be there to be able to lobby for our interests and as people of Indianapolis.
Has the mayor ever sent a written report to the council on the results of these economic development trips he's given abroad? In other words, you know,
no.
What's going on? No.
No, just no.
So nobody knows what the jobs are.
Well members of the Democrat caucus on the City County Council, we have not received any updates on any of these trips. Jobs they produce, anything.
Let me go to that guy, 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah, how you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, once again, I have to jump on the community about this. Once again, we've lived up to our name. Naptown. You know, it's getting ridiculous. I mean, we've got the right to vote. We've got the right to hold these politicians accountable. Them just, you know, getting rid of those four at-large seats was nothing but a political thing. All of a sudden, we've got a dictatorship with the mayor doing whatever he wants to do and everybody's falling in line, why don't we as a community get out there and hold these guys accountable? We don't have anybody out there that's really hitting the bricks like Glenn did when he was around and, you know, the different guys that was really out there working for the city. I mean, you know, it's really ridiculous.
What would you want him to do?
Well, my goodness, man. I mean, I'm one of them old dinosaurs from the old days.
Okay.
Get out there. Pick it around the city county building. Hold the guy accountable. Get out there and stay some kind of sit-in or stop-in or something. I mean, this guy, he's basically doing whatever he wants to do. And the only thing we can say is, hey, the Republicans got the numbers so they can do what they want to do.
Well, remember, all the people that Democrats voted for in the legislature, you know, voted against this legislation. So this legislation was approved by people that don't even live here. The people that our community, that listeners voted for, they stood up and fought like the Dickens to try to stop this. We got elections next year, and the mayoral election is 2015. You know what I say on this program? Don't get mad, you get even at the ballot box.
Yeah. So why don't we do like they do? See what they do. Who is the Democratic strategist for the city anyway? Who's the Democratic strategist? I don't even know who the guy is, if it's a guy or a girl.
Wouldn't that
because
be?
It appears that the Republicans have a battle plan that they're setting up, and step by step they're carrying it through. And it seems like the Democratic strategist is at home sleeping or either somewhere in the Bahamas enjoying himself.
Well, I think that, first of all, there's a new county chairman, and that's Joel Miller. And I don't think President Maggie Lewis, he's not home sleeping.
He is not. I met with him earlier today.
Are we going to cease?
You know, we need to have strategy together so we can really put these things in effect that really will help the city. Because getting rid of those four seats, it just blew me out of the seat when I was coming into town and heard that Mike Pence had signed the law.
Well, and actually the governor, this was cute, he put in a footnote in his 1,587-word thingamajig where he goes back to a lawsuit that was filed in 1992. Where Democrats were trying to get rid of the at-large back in the day when Democrats never thought they would even have a chance to win anything in Marion County. And they say, you Democrats didn't want this. Well, that was 20 years ago before all you Republicans left town. Let me go to Daryl at 239-1310. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Amos, and to Maggie Lewis. I am a member of your grandfather's church.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. I have a comment, and then I have a question to the council. The comment is, we got a mayor that don't know what the hockey sticks he's doing. That's one thing. I can't say what I wanted to say because I'm preaching. I wouldn't say anything outside
of
it.
We can read between the lines.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, my question is, Amos, I called the other day, and we were talking about the sidewalks, and I know this is probably something totally different than what you all are talking about. But I wanted to know what the council thinks about. They're spending this money on this field, but you can't put sidewalks on it, and the mayor comes talking about we don't have the money for it. That's a bunch of crap.
What do you guys in the
council think about that? I mean, there's safety issues. Got two people that have been killed out there on Emerson, right there at the I-70, and no sidewalks. But the mayor can spend money on a field that's not going to really even do anything for the black people. So I just want to know what you all think about that, and I'm going to hang up.
Yeah, go ahead. Thank you.
I think it's ridiculous. Do we want crickets or do we want sidewalks? Once again, it's about priorities. Do we want crickets or do we want more cops on our streets? And we have got to get the mayor to respond to that question. What's more important? What's the priority in our city?
Neighborhoods come down to council meetings when they feel their neighborhood is being threatened. When y'all have a zoning hearing, the place is packed. Mm-hmm. Is this something where people need to go to the mayor? The previous caller said put a picket line out in front of the city county building to maybe somebody have a protest actually in the mayor's office. Is it going to come to that? I mean, this mayor, unlike the governor or other major elected officials who put out a schedule to the public of where they're going to be, this mayor issues no public schedule. Nobody knows where he is today or what public appearances he's having today or anywhere this week. It's almost like he doesn't want to see people, and people are calling and saying, the mayor ought to be confronted. You can't confront somebody at a community meeting when he doesn't tell you he's going to be there.
Yeah, this is what I would say. The priorities of my priorities as an elected councilor are the priorities of neighborhoods. The priority of the mayor should be the priority of neighborhoods. So absolutely, people living in neighborhoods who do have different priorities, whose priorities are sidewalks, not crickets, whose priorities are public safety, cops, and not cricket, we need to make sure that the mayor hears that. You need to help him turn his view around so his priorities turn from being cricket rather than concrete and turn from being cricket rather than cops.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Athens News. Name is. We'll take a break. We'll be back around 2:15. We'll tell you how I read. How the third grade reading test, which measures do the third graders know how to read at the third grade level? How they did, including how did Little Flanner House do that last year? They were like at the bottom of the barrel in terms of I read. How did Flanner House do this year? We'll be here at 2:15 and we'll tell you. We'll also tell you how African Americans did in the key school districts and key charter schools. It's Afternoons with Amos on a Monday. One of the other provisions of this odious new law is we now have to count all the absentee ballots in one place. And that's going to cause an extra expense for no good reason.
Right. But Clerk White has done a wonderful job running elections and overseeing the process. And so she has a very limited budget. We know that. And we are not going to increase her budget anytime soon. And so this is just, once again, the Senate Bill 621 is so political. They know that she doesn't have the dollars to implement this. And so I think this is all political and all about the future elections.
What do you think is going to happen tonight? Oh, let me, before I ask you what the tone of the council meeting tonight, let me go to Jeff right quick. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
Fine.
Hey, I hope you had a great weekend.
Yes.
And Maggie Lewis?
Yes, sir.
I got to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
How come you haven't gotten on the phone yet and called Eric Holder at the U.S. Attorney General's office?
And ask him what, sir?
To investigate this mayor, because obviously he's behaving more like an emperor than a mayor.
You know, I do agree with that, but I'm not an attorney, and so I have to leave those legal questions and those types of things to the folks who does that for a living. That's somewhat out of my scope.
I understand. But, you know, but can't you see that, you know, and I know you're a savvy politician. You see how this mayor is behaving.
Mm-hmm.
He's not following a protocol. He's basically doing everything in a star chamber type environment. And somebody's got to stand up to this guy, because this guy is a bully. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I agree. And Senate Bill 621, in my mind, is a deal breaker. And how we move forward is going to be interesting. And this was it was political. You know, my colleagues and I, we've tried to work across the aisles and continue to move our city forward. But at some point, you know, and I think this is that point where, you know, things are going to have to change. Obviously, they're not interested in working with us.
And I understand that, Ms. Lewis. And you know, you're a great human being. I think you're doing a fine job down there at City Hall. I'm just telling you, I'm a Democrat. I've been a proud Democrat probably since 1968 when my mother took me to go see this great man that she knew was going to be president one day. But mm-hmm. that great man never became president because he was assassinated. That man was Bobby Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in spirit I became a Democrat. I was like 8 or 9 years old. And I'm just saying is, it's time for the Democrats to quit playing the hippy-dippy game. Let's all hold hands mm-hmm. and think we are the world. It's time for Democrats to become more like Harry Truman, Lyndon Baines Johnson, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama. It's time to take off the gloves and put on the brass knuckles. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I agree.
Thank you very much.
What do you think is going to be the mood tonight at the council meeting?
Oh, I believe it's going to be tense, and I think things are going to be tense for quite some time. Once again, Senate Bill 621 is a deal breaker for the members of my caucus.
Let me ask, there has been these questions raised about what the mayor actually does during the day, who he meets with. Has the council considered, or in the wake of this, asking for, you know, how many days has the mayor actually been in the office? How many days has he been out of the county? Because legally he has to notify someone in his office mm-hmm. when he is out of the county on business or out of the county on vacation, or even ask for the schedule of his public appearances?
You know, I do not know of any counselor who actually officially asked that question, but, you know.
Is that something the Committee on Committees or the Rules Committee?
Maybe the Rules Committee should take
ask,
this up.
Could absolutely. Ask that?
I think so.
Because that would raise the question of, you know, I had somebody say, well, nobody cares as to who the mayor, you know, I'd like to know, is the mayor ever met with the sheriff? Is he still ducking the NAACP? Let me go to John right quick. It'll be your last question for the president, the vice president of the council. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing today, Amos?
I'm fine.
Yeah, John Warren, Center Township Board, 5th District. Myself being a Republican, I was opposed to the township being reduced, the number of board members. I contacted the governor's office by phone as well as email. I contacted all of the state representatives on the Republican side, talked to a bunch of them I knew in person as well as state senators. So I just want you to know that everybody was in favor of everything in that bill by any means. But also, you were talking about the sheriff, and I know there's been some concern of his budget. The last I heard is the new Ashkenazi would not going to have a police wing in it or a police ward, and therefore the sheriff would not be there. And at that point, if that does happen, I haven't heard what has happened or what's being planned after that was announced here. You know, when they were talking about building this and everything. They said at the end they weren't going to do that. So the sheriff would no longer have deputies there to receive it. So every police department, no matter who you are, whether you're a small department like Southport down here, over here at Speedway, Lawrence, whoever, or IMPD, you would actually have to keep an officer there with the prisoner while they're in the custody at the hospital, at that hospital or any other. So at that point, I would think that would then have to come out of the department that was actually doing the arrest. I think that's going to be a game changer in a lot of things in the long run. Am I right, wrong, or has there something been changed since I last heard about that probably 6 months or a year ago?
I do know that there is not going to be the same approach at the new Wishard and Eskenazi as there is now. As far as how it's going to operate and how those hydraulics are going to work, I'd have to suggest that a representative from Wisher come at some future date, Amos.
All right. That's a great question, John, as always. I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, the council meeting is tonight. It might be tense. It might be more exciting than tomorrow night's Pacer game. Yeah. If Spike Lee, if you're in town, go to council meeting. This could be the scene of your next movie. City County Council President Maggie Lewis, Vice President John Barr. Thanks very much for being with us.